Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Jim Green, more commonly known, especially in Scaniatlas these days, as Charles Dickens. Scaniatlas has a festival on the weekends until December 24th called A Dickens Christmas, which is oriented around the story of A Christmas Carol and Dickens' actual visit to New York in 1842, a year prior to writing it. He's in character today, so I'll be calling him Charles. And as it happens, Saturday is the 168th anniversary of the publication of A Christmas Carol. Charles, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Grant. I appreciate you having me.
You're here in Scaniatlas largely because of A Christmas Carol, and I wanted to ask you a few questions about that. A Christmas Carol, it's such a powerful story, and it often has a great effect on the people who read it or see it dramatically portrayed, and it's got many life lessons in it. Is there one central message above the others that you think this tale is about?
Well, I would have to say that the lesson I think is predominant in the story is be nice, for goodness sake. You know, in my upbringing and in my experience on this world, things aren't always nice. People are not always nice to each other. And with the industrial age upon us and the lack of personalization of people's communication, what we needed to remember was that we are all passengers on the train to the grave. We're all in this together, and I think that's ultimately, it's a story of redemption. It's been told a million different ways in a million different. I just happen to tell it correctly.
Is there something in particular that inspired you to write this?
Well, many things inspired me. One being a terrible experience I had at the age of 12. My father was hauled off to debtor's prison, and I was in an effort to help the family and reduce his debt, I worked at a bootblack factory filling bottles with shoe polish and putting labels on it. And 12 hours a day at 12 years old is a terrible percentage of your life to spend in drudgery. And I remember the rats in the basement coming up the rotting stairs. It was a terrible experience. It haunts me yet to this day. And so that, of course, would be an inspiration to write about one man's ability to change our toils from troublesome to light, you know, and as Mr. Fezziwig does in the story. And I will reference the story a lot. I love this story. And the other thing that inspired me so much, I am loath to admit, is my bank account was dwindling. I was flat broke and thought, well, my last shot at being a writer of fiction, not a fictional being, is a Christmas story. And everyone loves ghosts, and voila, here we are.
You know, I want to come back to your own personal situation in terms of being a writer and the finances of that. Your life is really quite unique in that way. But I'm going to come back to the lessons of the story for a second. It does seem to be a story where you can kind of put on two things, different points. I mean, you mentioned be nice, and in a sense, what I took from that is be generous, and the redemption, the transformation that Scrooge goes through. But one of the things I remember the first time I encountered it, and I don't know whether it was if I read it or I saw it being performed, but
by the Muppets.
I think it was a different group. But it was this sense of also appreciating what you have, that you know, the Cratchits are happy
they
in a
were
way,
happy. They and were
and,
very happy
and they felt family. And they felt sorry for the person who's rich.
Right? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
I know. You know, and sometimes I want to say to people, don't overthink it. It's just a story. But that's true. That those people who can make themselves happy with some cheap ribbons festooning their house for sixpence and having a small goose and that, but being together and loving one another, and that's really the essence of life. This is what I think is important here, is cutting through the fat and getting to the humanity of it all. That, you know, we're just people. Things don't make you happy. It's being engaged and loving each other that makes us happy. I mean, at the risk of, I don't want to sound religious. And I don't really think it's all tied into religion, but the message of love is really, really key to all of this, I think.
Well, you mentioned religious, and obviously the setting of Christmas, we'll come back to that, but do you think of this as a religious story?
I do not, really. I think of it as spiritual, in the sense that Mr. Scrooge's spirit was renewed, and And it took a lot to beat that spirit out of him. I mean, as a boy, you may recall from the story that he spent his formative years alone at the school, not unlike a debtor's prison, I might add. And then he was brought home but put right to work and apprenticed at Fezziwigs. And then his fiancée leaves him because he was so engrossed with gain. And his feeling was that there's nothing so hard in this world as poverty. And so he kind of just got misguided and lost his spirituality or his humanity. You know, I mean, I kind of use those interchangeably because I think we're all spiritual beings of some type or another. And like I said, I'm not exceptionally a religious person, but I do believe in the spirit of humanity. And so Scrooge is going through all of these things that made him that helped him forge the chains he made in life. You know, I mean, it took a lot to get him there. So it had to be rather dramatic to get him out of there. So hence the supernatural, the influence. And Scrooge needed the spirits. He needed Jacob Marley's interference with the three spirits that, you know, otherworldly things. And even in religion, you know, it's the deity that changes, that enables us to be nice to each other. And it's interesting to me. That's all.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Jim Green of Scarlet Rat Entertainment. He's also known as Charles Dickens. Well, one of the things you're known for in your writings is the creation of these memorable characters, and one of my favorites was Mr. Micawber and David Copperfield. Is there a character in A Christmas Carol that's your own personal favorite?
Well, Grant, you know, that's like asking me which is my favorite child. You know, I like to say I have, you know, my three favorite children, and each one is one of them. So I would have to say that I love Scrooge's cleaning lady, Mrs. Dauber. I find her to be hilarious. And when Scrooge suddenly turns nice to her, she is going to call the police. She wants him. She doesn't understand what's going on at all. And when Scrooge says, no, it's a Christmas present, you know, and I just find that to be endearing. And now she was the woman who, had his course not been changed by the visitations, would have sold his bed curtains, you know, while he laid on the bed dead. The spirit yet of Christmas yet to come showed him, you know. And I have an affinity for her. But, you know, they're all lovely. I should have put a dog in there. Everyone loves dogs.
And the names of these characters, I think, are perhaps as memorable as their personalities. You just mentioned Mrs. Dauber. What a name for a cleaning lady. But to go back to David Copperfield, one of my favorites is just for the name, Uriah Heep, and certainly Mr. Scrooge. I mean, the very word Scrooge innately sounds like something miserly and misanthropic to us.
Doesn't it?
But it's because of A Christmas Carol that it sounds that way to
us. You're asking me the question of the chicken or the egg.
Here is the question. I mean, how do you come up with these names?
Well, it's very interesting. And it, actually, you know, the muse comes from so many different places. And only this morning I was getting my breakfast martini and the bartender said, Oliver Twist. And I said, brilliant. What a great name for an orphan. I'm kidding, of course. But to ask me where I got the name, I couldn't begin to tell you that. They just come to you as a creative person writing. You get into the fever. You know, when you write, sometimes you step through the portal and you're not yourself. You're the story writes itself, you know. And so I do like the name. I do think that's one of my strong points, that I'm relatively good at coming up with names for things. Uriah Heep is the name of a band, as I understand nowadays.
Yes.
I've been plagiarized.
And the title of their first album was Very, Very Humble. So.
Humble.
Right. But one of the things that your writing has been criticized for by some other writers, especially those who came a few decades after you, is that for all the good storytelling that you have, it's overly sentimental and completely unbelievable. What do you say to that?
Hogwash. I say that, you know, hundreds of thousands of loyal readers aren't wrong. And sometimes in life, what we need is sentimentality and simplifying things into the basic emotions of love, hate, greed, charity, pain, you know, those kinds of things. We can all relate to them on one level or another. We've all experienced these things in one form or another. And so do I get, well, you know, maybe, but just people enjoy that and people relate to it. And so I say, you know, God save it.
So I'm talking with Jim Green, also known as Charles Dickens of Scarlet Rat Entertainment, who's talking to me in character today and who otherwise these days can be found in Skinny Atlas. Well, I guess I'm going to channel my inner Scrooge to ask you this. The setting of A Christmas Carol, Christmas time, really makes it work on a number of different levels, but I'm wondering whether it also has a limiting effect on its message. You know, that people will think about these things at Christmas, and then they'll go back to their unappreciative, insensitive, ungenerous, unnice ways the rest of the year.
Right.
Is that a problem?
I wouldn't call it a problem, but I would say that in July, you'd be lucky to have anyone thinking of charity. You're absolutely right. Now, does this enhance the effect, you know, by concentrating these things at this time of year? I don't know. I think in the bleak midwinter when we're cold and it's dark at 4:30, and, you know, I mean, I think that's an appropriate time to be looking for that inner light, that warmth of human kindness, as Christmas Present is apt to say, the milk of human kindness that he spreads from his horn of plenty. And here again, you know, this is the thing about which came first. I'm not sure. Not sure if our view nowadays of Christmas has been affected by My Little Tale, so that it's hard to say whether, you know, this. Like I said, I was broke. I mean, there's a great mercenary part of my publishing Christmas Carol. It was the same thing about creating serialization, publishing a chapter at a time. It's all about the money. Show me the money. Mm-hmm. Thinking of myself as a thespian at heart, you know, I was not good with money. I don't manage my money all that well, you know. And in our day, copyright what? I mean, you know, the book was published a million times without any recompense to myself. And that's all, that is what it is, you know. Those are shadows that have been. I can't change them, but it's an interesting thing that you must continually produce in order to continually.
And I had another question about this theme of Christmas, and it's about the way that Christmas has been commercialized. I mean, one could argue that it's become a consumption-focused holiday that begins 2 hours after the Thanksgiving turkey has been carved. Is that a concern for you, this commercialization?
I disagree completely, Grant. With all due respect, I believe Christmas begins 2 hours after Halloween. But yes, it is not so much a concern, for I believe that if we just take a moment and remember the love, you know, influence of the whole thing, that the commercialization doesn't need to make us, you know, self-centered and evil people. Obviously, money drives the world around, and so it becomes commercial, and you do see, you know, I'm kind of saddened by that it has become so commercial, but I don't think that necessarily damages, you know. Now, the idea that people go to a store at midnight, Thanksgiving night, to be the first in line to get the new, you know, handheld gaming device at half price, I would be lying if I said I never did it. And ultimately, people remember when it gets time, when the shopping's done and it gets down to Christmas and you're spending time with your loved ones. And, you know, then I think so what?
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations. And my guest is Jim Green, also known as Charles Dickens. Well, you've mentioned your own finances a couple times, and I want to ask you a question about that. You're the first celebrity author, a writer to ultimately become super famous and rich as an author during your own lifetime. Now, look at our celebrity culture now. What do you make of this?
Who knew? Well, I don't know. I like to hope that I have never become so egocentrically self-centered. I mean, obviously, as a performer, I'm somewhat of a megalomaniac, or I wouldn't like to hear my own voice quite so much, and I do, you know, and that's all right. But I'm also charitable, and I try to be nice to people, and I, you know, I try to remember the lessons that I teach. I see some celebrities who are not, at least superficially. I don't know. I don't know these people. I don't know how they are. But I it seems to me that money can corrupt, and too much success too quickly for people can. They lose a connection to the people, and that's, as you know, Bose. Everyone in London calls me Bose. I'm a man of the people. I walk through the streets, and I love being famous, and I love having money. But I still, you know, love throwing one back with the boys down at the tavern house. You know, and not being separated as you know, that's kind of what my themes are always about, is being engaged and connected to humanity. And I would say to these celebrities, you know, go back where you grew up. Mm. Spend a little time with those folks and relax.
And do you have a particularly memorable story of interacting on the street in Scaniatlas with someone during the Christmas season? Mr.
Well,
Dickens?
There's so many. But one of my favorite things that is my annual Christmas picture with the dog Pepper. There's a lovely woman who brings her little dog dressed up in Christmas finery every year, and I sit and hold the dog, and she takes a picture, and that's her Christmas card. And somehow I think of the words of Patrick Stewart as he's emoting to the Romulan slime monster, and he says, 30 years in the Royal Shakespeare Company, and this is what I'm reduced to, you know. But it's lovely. And see, there again, it's lovely to be part of her Christmas, for her to look forward to this, you know. And you know, a couple of dog bites, well, it's all right. I'm giving of myself. So, but there's also things, I see the humor in all of this.
And what are your favorite things to see and do in Scaniatlas this time of year?
Well, the horse-drawn hay wagon ride is delightful, and that's complimentary. Of course, I tell people I've signed Mr. Scrooge's name to all this, so don't tell him. And I'll tell you one thing that's so wonderful to me is when Mr. Scrooge and Bob Kriegbaum, a wonderful man, plays Mr. Scrooge, has for years. He predates me at the festival. And we get people to say, when he walks up, "Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge." And he always says, "I hate Christmas." And as soon as he says it, everybody laughs. You can't not. I've heard him say it 5 million times, and I laugh every time he says it. And then he says, "You know, what's Christmas?" But any kind of quotes from the story. But the response, for everyone to be in disbelief, and you know, laughter is your brain being surprised. And when somebody says, "I hate Christmas," and everybody laughs because it's just ridiculous. but that's one of the memorable things that I forget the question, but
no, you got
how
it.
I do go on.
You got it. Well, I've got a final question for you before we get to three questions at the end, and this is definitely for Mr. Dickens. Your writings, including A Christmas Carol, often provide harrowing and unflinching looks at poverty and the effects of economic inequality. So I'm very curious to know, what do you think of this Occupy Wall Street movement that's going on?
Well, I'm glad I don't live on Wall Street, but I think it's wonderful, and I think the people should always say what they mean what they say. And if you have convictions, I firmly support living those convictions to the fullest, and I applaud them. Well, do they want something specific? Who knows, you know, but they certainly want change to occur. And this is what we, you know, in the 1840s, things needed to change. Do we need a specific, you know, this man needs to do this for that? I don't know, you know, but change occurred. You know, Queen Victoria instigated many social programs that changed the direction of society. And I think it's wonderful. I applaud them.
Yeah, I couldn't help seeing the overlap and thinking about some of the things that have influenced your writing and your experiences in your writing. Well, let me get to the three questions. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
Mankind is my business. I am just praying that the story sells well. My life in 1843, Christmas of 1843. Of course, our premise is that I'm meeting Scrooge and Bob Cratchit in Scaniatlas. But I would say the chapter is you know, this one will be a bestseller. That's an interesting question.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Oh, my worst trait. I'm such a perfectionist, and I'm so nice. No, that's really a ridiculous answer. I would say my worst trait, it would be megalomania. It would be self-centered and wanting attention.
And finally, what achievement in your creative and professional life so far has surprised you the most?
Well, the success of this story has been a great surprise. I mean, we're jumping in time a little bit, but the fact that this changed everything, what a lovely thing and what a lovely surprise. And who knew that this short, small five staves of a Christmas ghost story would affect everyone, kind of, you know?
That was Jim Green as Charles Dickens. You can see him for yourself in Skinny Atlas the next two weekends. Charles, Jim, thanks so much for talking with
me. Thank you, Grant. My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
Support comes from the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University, dedicated to the study and practice of citizenship, leadership, and public governance. Information at maxwell.syr.edu.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender and Kelly Coleman, with recording engineer Tom Fazio. Learn more about the Campbell Conversations by visiting our website, wrvo.fm.